Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning health brief. Dr. Jeffrey Boomer is emergency medicine physician for Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Dr. Boomer, good morning. Let's talk about President Biden and the aggressive prostate cancer he's been diagnosed with. We're hearing that it's not curable, but very treatable. So does that mean it's possible he could live with this condition for years without complications?
Yeah, obviously we don't know all the details, but we know some, and we know that other patients that have been in similar situations as him with sort of this aggressive type of prostate cancer that is hormone sensitive, as we've come to find out, which we can talk about, but that does tend to give him more treatment options that can sort of suppress the tumor growth and allow him to live a longer life. So yeah, I don't think this is not an imminent issue for him. I think he's certainly, assuming that his other health issues are not also an issue, which can certainly happen as we get older. But mm-hmm. in his case, I think that, from the prostate cancer standpoint, I think there's no reason to believe that he can't live a longer life with the options that he has in front of him.
What does hormone sensitive mean?
Yeah, so it means that if by suppressing androgens or the male testosterone in the body, this type of tumor, it sounds like he has, is hormone sensitive, meaning that it responds, like the androgens or testosterone in the body actually promote the growth. It allows, it sort of fuels the fire, if you will. And if there are medicines that can suppress that effect on the tumor that allow that tumor to basically not have that key ingredient that allows it to grow quickly. So by suppressing that, it basically sort of chokes off the tumor's one of its main supplies of its growth, mm-hmm. and it can allow that tumor to be suppressed for a longer period of time.
We're told that Joe Biden was seen by doctors last week after urinary symptoms, and then a prostate nodule was found. What could those urinary symptoms have been?
Yeah, I mean, most patients will describe this sort of difficulty urinating, which can mean a lot of different things. But one of the common ones is sort of straining or difficult to get to initiate that initial stream of urine is difficult. Often they'll report that the stream is often weak. They may find that they have this urge to urinate frequently because they're not completely empty in their bladder, so they find themselves going to the bathroom more frequently, particularly at night. You hear people talk about something we call nocturia, which is where a patient gets up frequently in the middle of the night to urinate, just again because they're not really emptying their bladder fully. Some patients will report some pain or a burning sensation. Someone may notice some blood in the urine as well. And some may even have a little bit of incontinence. And again, that may be related to the bladder overfilling and not able to empty it fully.
Mm. Now, this is scaring many men who may have an enlarged prostate and experience some of those symptoms, but that could be completely benign, as I understand it. Am I right?
Correct. Yeah, most of the time enlarged prostates are indeed benign prostatic hyperplasia or BPH. So that is as the name indicates, it is a benign entity. Prostate cancer can cause the same effects on the ability to urinate as benign prostatic hyperplasia can, but again, it's obviously for a very different reason. And in the case of prostate cancer, it's because there is a tumor growing in the prostate that is pushing on the urethra and disallowing the normal urine flow. So, mm-hmm. but correct, they are completely separate things. But regardless, I mean, if you experience those symptoms, obviously they impact your life and your livelihood and your ability to sleep, your ability to engage in a normal day. So I would encourage anyone that has those symptoms, for whatever the reason may be, to get it checked out.
We're hearing about a Gleason score. What is that exactly?
So the Gleason score just is an indicator. It's a tumor marker, essentially, that tells us how aggressive is the tumor. So it's the scale goes from 2 to 10. So I believe Dr. Biden's President Biden's was 9, mm-hmm. and I think that indicates that it is obviously closer. It's on the high end, so it is more aggressive, which means that it's growing a little bit more quickly, more likely to spread than the lower score would indicate. So that's why they call it aggressive, why they know it's aggressive. And we also know that it sounds like it's metastasized to his bones. So we know that it's already metastasized. We don't know how widely, but we know that it's in his bones.
Big question a lot of people wondering about, and obviously you haven't seen the file, so we don't know for sure, but the president had a physical, as presidents do every year. I think his was like 15 months ago, and obviously those physicals are pretty exhaustive. Wouldn't he have had a PSA test as part of a regular physical? And if so, would something have shown up last February?
We don't know all the details, and I would assume that he would have had a PSA test. Now, you know, he certainly could have decided not to have it for various reasons. I mean, to be honest, I mean, over the age of 70, it's not, and if a patient has less than 10 or 15 years of life expectancy, the general consensus is not to do a PSA. So it is not necessarily done in every patient over 70. That's a decision that a patient and a doctor have to make, whether or not they want to pursue that, because most of the time if the patient does not have that life expectancy to, you know, beyond that 10 or 15 year range, it may not make a difference. Now in this case, I would have guessed that if he had a PSA done 15 months ago, I would be surprised if it weren't elevated, but mm-hmm. Again, we don't know that detail, but that may have been a decision that he and his physician made, that maybe we don't need to do a PSA. Maybe it's not going to make it, you know, if my life expectancy isn't that long, maybe we wouldn't want to do the PSA in that case. So hard to say, but mm-hmm. I would have guessed that it would have been elevated 15 months ago.
Yeah, and the reason for not doing it on someone his age would be, why make someone worry about something that may be fatal at age 120? Is that the thinking?
Absolutely, right. Exactly, yeah. Exactly right. So,
Dr. Jeffrey Boehmer is emergency medicine physician for Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. And we're now hearing, as you know, doctor, about these weight loss drugs possibly cutting alcohol cravings. What's the story on this?
Yeah, it's. I think what we're seeing is not a surprise. I've actually talked to patients that have experienced this as well, where, you know, I think the drugs actually not just blunt appetite, but they blunt cravings. And I think that's exactly what we're seeing with alcohol, that they just don't have that desire to want to, you know, go have a drink. And so mm-hmm. I think when they look at the study, the recent study that was done in Ireland, they found that those patients that were in the process of just going through weight loss, that was the sole purpose of the use of the medication, they found that those patients that did use alcohol regularly were dropping their alcohol consumption by almost 70% within 4 months. So it's pretty remarkable. It has something to do with, you know, we don't know all the physiology exactly, but we know that it's probably, that sort of has an effect on dopamine, and that it reduces those cravings in the brain, including cravings for alcohol. So in the patients that I've actually spoken with, some of them as well, where they remarked about how they cut back on their alcohol use, and then they said it's effortless. I just don't have that desire to want to have a drink. And it's pretty remarkable. So I think we're going to see some, I would not be surprised in the next year or two if we don't see that the intentions of this medication go beyond just weight loss or for diabetes, but we may see it for other conditions such as alcohol use disorder going forward.
Yeah, it's interesting. More people are on these drugs, and so far the studies have all been pretty positive. We haven't been hearing too much about any warnings or caution here, have we?
Not much, no. I mean,
lots of benefits.
You do hear a little bit about hair loss. I've heard some of the, but overall, I mean, I think if in the right patient population, where patients are having issues with obviously overweight, diabetes, those patients have risk for heart disease and stroke, and so in that patient population, we're curbing behaviors and curbing their, you know, including alcohol consumption, but curbing their appetites. Resulting in weight loss, better glucose control, blood sugar control. And so they obviously have health benefits that are outweighing any potential long-term effects, which we don't really see so far. So again, yeah. it's they've only been out for a few years. Long-term, we don't know yet, but I mean, the studies prior to them coming out on the big market didn't indicate any long-term major side effects. So you know, I hate to call them anything a miracle drug, but so far, I mean, we've seen that these have had a very positive effect on patients.
Yeah, so far, so good. Like you say, we have to wait and see about long term. What do you make of the clinical trials that indicate these weight loss medications work better for one sex than the other?
Yeah, they actually, this came out in the New England Journal of Medicine recently, and they actually compared it. I think it's been anecdotally noted that women tend to have a better weight loss in terms of the actual amount of weight loss than men. And they actually, you know, found that in the 11% weight loss in women compared to 8% in men. You know, I think there's a few different reasons why. You know, women typically weigh less than men, but they're dosed the same way. So men and women are giving the same dose. So it may be more of maybe men just need more of a higher dose to get the same effect that women are getting. Women also tend to carry more subcutaneous fat on their bodies, where men tend to carry more what we call visceral fat, which is around the organs of our body. And so that may be a reason why we're seeing that better weight loss in women, because of just the distribution of fat in our bodies. Estrogen probably has an effect on this as well. It seems like estrogen kind of boosts the effects of these drugs, and so that may be a player in why we're seeing this. And then, you know, I think, you know, in general, I think we see that women probably have a greater motivation to make these medications work, and so they may be more tolerant of the side effects, you know, like the nausea and vomiting that we see in the short term. So that may be part of it as well. So, but I think going forward, I think it's going to help. That seeing these differences, it may help physicians sort of tailor their treatments and the dosing to see if they can get a little bit better effect in men. But those are probably some of the better explanations for why we're seeing that.
And before we let you go, it's the allergy season. It seems to be worse than ever. That's what I'm hearing. And what can people do if they suffer from allergies now?
Yeah. I tell you, my daughter came home from college and she was miserable for a good solid week. I was trying to throw in the kitchen sink at her almost literally. It was it's been tough. And I've seen a lot of, like you said, Bob, I've heard a lot of patients saying that it's been bad this year. So, I mean, the things, but without the medications, I mean, obviously staying indoors, windows closed, especially when, you know, days like we've had recently when it's really windy and the pollen levels are high. You know, if you're going to go outside, I mean, obviously we all need to go outside, but if you're going to spend time outside, wait till it sounds like we're going to get some rain coming up here. So maybe go after a good rain shower when the pollen levels are lower. I wouldn't encourage you to do any cutting the grass or weed pulling if you've got bad allergies. And if you've been outside, once you come inside, take your clothes off, take a shower, make sure you're doing all those things. Use your air conditioning. I would say, make sure you got a good HEPA filter going in there. If you have a HEPA filter going in your bedroom as well. And then medication wise, sort of the old standards, Zyrtec, Allegra, Claritin, antihistamine medications are effective. The nasal sprays, the steroid nasal sprays like Nasacort or Flonase can be effective. Nasal irrigation is something that some patients have said can be really helpful. Sort of the sinus rinses could be helpful, kind of getting rid of all that mucus and that are carrying the pollens in there can be helpful as well to overcome it.
My wife's driving me crazy. It's cool out, but I can't open any windows. Air conditioning must be on at all times in the car. So yeah. I have to live with it for a few more weeks, I guess. Huh?
It's real. It's real.
Dr. Jeffrey Boomer, Northwestern Medicine. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bob.